This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Instead of the Demolition Man of 12 months previous, these were sensible additions to enhance, you know, an already decent squad. And I think there was a clear structure and a clear plan. Whereas the previous year, we'd gone out a little bit scattergun approach, you know, to try and bring in all these kind of players. Some hadn't worked out. We saw some move on. And this year, the recruitment was so much more focused and really trying to build what McKenna was trying to do with the squad.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, covering all things Ipswich Town since 2015. My name is Mikey Penty-Smith, and this is a special season review, part one, looking back at the magnificent 2022-23 campaign. And joining me for this is Seb Brown and Joe Fares. How are you both? Joe, how much are you missing Portman Road at this stage?
I'm fortunate that I'm the only one of the three of us that's an Ipswich resident, so when I sort of feeling a bit too much withdrawal symptoms, I can just take a little drive down there and pass the stadium, check on what's going on at the Staples building, see if I can get a glimpse through onto the pitch to see the work's been done there. No, so I have had to do that a couple of times since the season ended already.
Lovely. I'm guessing you haven't driven down from North Wales to do that yet, Seb?
Not yet. No, I'm back for the bank holiday weekend, so I'll swing by to get my fix of the stadium. No, it's just a bit rubbish, isn't it? Saturdays without Ipswich playing. I think I did some gardening last weekend, cleared out a shed, had a barbecue, and unfortunately it's not August yet, so plenty more Saturdays to go, annoyingly.
The only good thing though was on Friday night I went round a friend's for a Chinese and a couple of beers, and I could just sit there with a Peterborough Sheffield Wednesday game on, just chilling as opposed to panicking and being on sort of like death's door trying to watch it.
Yeah, playoffs are so much more fun when you're not involved. Although, of course, we had a few seasons where we'd have absolutely bloody loved to have been in the playoffs, but there we are. So, we're going to do the first half of last season. Looking back, we're not going to talk about every single game. We won't go into too much detail about Bracknell away or Butson at home. But we're looking back, and it's been quite good fun, hasn't it, doing the research, gents? And there's been some quite interesting numbers pop up as well, which I think they'll probably look more at in part two. But Seb, some really interesting numbers, particularly Connor Chaplin's goals.
There are, yeah. So I had a quick look last night at where everyone stood at the halfway point in terms of goals and stuff. And Chaplin, I think, only had 9 at the halfway point, which when you consider, you know, what he finished on, he had a hell of a second half of the season. I know he scored, was it 10? I think he got in April when he won the Player of the Month, so a large chunk of them came there. But he was on that. Ladapo, I think, was on 7. So, you know, the overall kind of goals first half, the second half of the season, it rose dramatically with all those, you know, 4-0 home wins, 3-0 away wins at our promotion rivals, 2 6-0s in there. But I thought it was very interesting. Yeah, halfway through the campaign, I kind of thought Chaplin would at least be into double figures. But no, he's only on 9.
He was indeed. And there was also a few surprises for me just looking back at this summer transfer window. And you'll have to forgive me, we're trying to go in order here, but I appreciate that some of these signings obviously came along later into the window. But I must admit, I thought we were stronger than we were. Obviously, it kind of makes sense that in January we brought in 4 players that were absolutely pivotal. But so I guess the big signings are up there at the top, Leif Davis and Marcus Harness. They were there pretty early on, weren't they? We strengthened, we brought in two left backs, didn't we? But I think the main takeaway from that transfer window, Joe, was the inability to sign another striker after we got Freddie Ladapo so early on, didn't we? It was about this time last year, but we failed to get that second one over the line.
Yeah, I think Ladapo was our first signing, wasn't he? He came in and it was an agreed at the end of his contract from Rotherham he was going to be coming here for the new season. And I think everyone thought, oh, it's a good signing, player there, but there's going to be another striker signed. And I think we probably all imagined Freddie would start the season as backup or sort of in the role he played, sort of the second striker as opposed to the first one. But it just didn't come. And then we signed John Jules on loan from Arsenal. And then there was talk, oh, actually, yeah, even though we chased George Hurst all summer and latterly Will Keane, there isn't the need for a striker because everyone's been impressed with John Jules. And I remember on pod saying, I'm not really buying this. I think we need another centre forward. And lo and behold, transfer deadline day saw Ghassan Ahadmi turn up. And I say, just with when you look back at it now, that transfer deadline day really was a bit of a disaster, wasn't it? We end up with Ghassan Ahadmi and Panucci Kamara. Obviously, all worked out well, but those two players gave us absolutely zero throughout the season. One through injury, one through just not being
up
to the standard, really. So, we were short in that centre forward role, and we were very well not lucky. I don't know if that's the right word, that Freddie Ladapo was able to stay fit through the whole start of the season. But when you look, we had John Jules, Jackson, Ahadmé starting sort of games here and there in cups in as that centre forward, but it never looked quite right.
I'm just going to read through these because I appreciate that a lot of people will be listening on podcasts rather than watching on video. So this is done in expenditure order. So Leif Davis was the big signing at the top. Then Marcus Harness, Panucci Kamara came in a little bit later. Dominic Ball, Freddie Ladapo, Greg Lee, Richard Keogh. And then, as you mentioned, Ghassan Ahadmi came in later on. Tyrese John-Jules was there from the start on loan from Arsenal. But Seb, I'm guessing, despite that lack of striker, I think we were looking at that thinking, this squad is definitely good enough to challenge at the top of the table.
I think so, yeah. We'd had the kind of 6 months under McKenna and it was very obvious how he was going to play, and we clearly recruited that way. You know, when you look at the likes of Greg Lee, Ladapo, Dom Ball, these are kind of physical players. You know, the Salina thing kind of rumbled on a little bit, and then we went out and got Marcus Harness, a player who I've always liked at this level, so I thought he was a bit of a coup. And then I guess, yeah, Davis was the kind of the big exciting one, really, wasn't he? Because, you know, we're spending over £1 million on a reserve left back who played a handful, was it a dozen games for Bournemouth the previous season? But you're thinking, okay, well, he's come through under Bielsa, which means he's going to be, firstly, probably incredibly fit. We know McKenna wants that from his players. He's going to be very well drilled if he's come from a Bielsa preseason and a Bielsa school of training. So, yeah, I think we all kind of assumed going into the season that we would certainly be top four. I think I predicted us to finish second. I thought Peterborough would win the league, but I thought we'd finish second. And these were kind of, instead of the demolition man of 12 months previous, these were sensible additions to enhance, you know, an already decent squad. And I think there was a clear structure and a clear plan, whereas the previous year we'd gone out a little bit scattergun approach, you know, to try and bring in all these kind of players. Some hadn't worked out. We saw some move on with the likes of Piggott off to Pompey. And this year the recruitment was so much more focused and really trying to build for what McKenna was trying to do with the squad.
And the first game of the season was a pretty tricky one on paper. I think we knew at the time that Bolton were going to be quite good this season. I'll just run through that lineup. Not going to do this, by the way, for every single game, but I thought it'd be interesting to look back at that first lineup. So Walton was in goal. And it's kind of the back three of Danasian, Edmondson and Wolfenden. Davis came in for his debut despite only signing, I think, a couple of days before that match. So he was picked ahead of Lee. He was giving us the whip down the left, Burns on the right. And then it was the double pivot of Morsey and Evans, which was really good early on in the season. And then Marcus Harness was in for his debut. And Chaplin in behind Freddie Ladapo, who did get the nod from the start ahead of John Jules. And Davis, the big money signing, had a bit of a nightmare in that game, didn't we? And ultimately, it was a game that we ended up drawing.
Yeah, he was up against Connor Bradley, wasn't he? He was probably Bolton's sort of best player, probably the best right back in the league this season. And he gave him a tough time. I think Davis had been on pre-season tour in Australia and he'd only landed back a couple of days before. And he did look not with it. Not awful, but just not quite up to it. I don't think he trained with the team before then, sort of just dropped straight into it, and maybe that was a mistake that McKenna made on that first day of the season. But we got back into the game, got level, and should have won the game right at the death, shouldn't we? Sam Morsey bursting through on goal and sort of listen over. I think we were all quite happy with the start. Bolton was always a tricky game to start with. They were one of the better sides in the second half of the season, and they probably one of the only sides that really convincingly beat us under Kieran McKenna in the season before, and it was an absolutely baking hot day at Portman Road, wasn't it? And end of July.
It was, yeah. It was a cracking atmosphere, though, and a sign of things to come, said that goal as well. Being creative with the set pieces, and it was Evans that scored it.
Yeah, obviously it was something one of the, we'll probably talk throughout the podcast about sort of boxes ticked in compared to previous years. And yeah, it's kind of a clever routine by Chaplin, who kind of pulls the ball back to an onrushing Evans round about the kind of edge of the box, who smashes it first time into the net. And yeah, on the first day, you just don't want to lose, do you? Against a rival, you don't want to lose that first game of the season. So we should have won it with the chance at the end from Morsey. But yeah, you know, a baking hot day. It's a test for the players' fitness. A few new arrivals bedding in, get the point, and then look to move on to the easier games to come, because Bolton on the first day wasn't exactly a gimme, was it?
No, that one wasn't a gimme. And as you say, there were easier games ahead. We played Forest Green the following Saturday, although it didn't prove to be an easy game. Marcus Harness got off the mark. Morsey made up for his missed chance the previous week with a lovely curling goal down, is it the Cotswolds? Forest Green, I remember people having a nightmare getting to that game. But one that we just needed to tick off. Wolfenden missed that game. I don't think he missed many more after that, Joe.
No, I think he'd picked up a knock because he wasn't on the bench for that one. He just wasn't there. And I don't think he really missed any more until there was one away at Morecambe where Keogh came in for it. And then the two at the back end of the season, again against Morecambe and Cambridge, I think he missed those two. But that was about it for him there.
Yeah, and just looking at it, I think we kind of switched to more of a four at the back for that one and push Burns higher up the pitch. And next up, we had our first three-game week of the season with Milton Keynes at home. And I think we were all anticipating a really tricky game there, Seb. Completely brushed them aside, didn't we? 3-0. Really impressive stuff.
It was, yeah, one of the hallmarks. I was setting your stall out at the start of the season. You know, another baking hot day. They just come off the back of a superb performance. They lost in the playoffs, obviously, to Wickham across the two legs. They did lose people in the summer, but I still kind of thought, I didn't think they'd be in the playoffs, but I certainly didn't think they would have got relegated. I thought they'd kind of finished just outside between sort of 7th and 10th. And yeah, we kind of started to see that any side that comes to Portman Road and wants to try and take us on will get taken apart. You know, we were so comfortable. We scored early, which is always a big, big help. I remember Dean Lewington getting torn apart by Burns and Thassian down our right-hand side, their left. And yeah, we kind of started to see this development of the team moving from that back three to more like a four with kind of really advanced full-backs and Morsey and Evans providing that solid base for the wide players to go on and do their stuff. And yeah, it was, like you said, the start of a three-game week, a really, really good performance against a side that had been, you know, much better than us the previous year. And just another little box ticking that, you know, if a side wants to come and try and take us on, we'll be pretty comfortable, because we were starting to see this kind of pre-season paying off where McKenna had clearly been drilling patterns of play and overlapping fullbacks. I remember Danassian getting to the byline. I think it's a Chaplin's goal, the third one. He gets an overlap from Burns, gets to the byline, pulls it back, and Chaplin shoots home. And yeah, we were starting to see things that had clearly been worked on from the summer in front of our faces. And it was great to see.
Indeed, yeah. And you talked about ticked boxes, Seb. The first ticked box came, another tick box came on the following Tuesday away at Burton, where we won a game away from home without playing well at all, Joe. Marcus Harness was the match winner. I think Greg Lee got the nod for that one, and Gassner Hadmi was a bit of a handful up front for Burton, but a bit of individual magic from Harness. And we were really pleased to get the 3 points off that, because that was a pretty sticky performance, wasn't it?
I think when you look back at it, if you go into like the stats of games, like the XG, the chances had, that was probably our worst performance of the season, or the team that played best against us, whichever way you want to put it. That was the side that caused us the most problems, and we caused them very little. If it wasn't for a couple of really good saves from Christian Walton, efforts cleared off the line, crossbar smashed, we could have been well behind in that game. And it took a really good goal from Marcus Harness in the second half to win it, but it's not like when we scored the goal, it settled us down and we then sort of started picking up. They were just really better than us from start to finish. And we got out there with 3 points, and you looked at the table and said, like, okay, we're now picking up here, and sort of this is going to be a season where we're going to be looking up rather than down.
Indeed it was, especially as we then went to Shrewsbury on the Saturday and we absolutely swept them aside. I think Shrewsbury had, I think I remember even from your pre-match show way back in August, Seb, that Shrewsbury were in dire straits at this point. They didn't have many players available, but we did a real professional job on them, and John Jules announced himself as an Ipswich player with that wonderful individual goal.
Yeah, he got the nod for the first time as the number 9, didn't he? So Ladapo was on the bench and John Jules gets that central striking role. And yeah, we absolutely took them to the cleaners. It could have been way more. I remember Vincent Young, we should have had a penalty within the first 5-10 minutes. It was one of the most blatant penalties you'll see that wasn't given. Didn't matter in the end. But John Jules scores that goal where, yeah, you know, he kind of uses his strength to win the ball back off one of their centre-halves. I think I described it as Thierry Henry-esque on the flagship show afterwards, because he kind of sits a couple of players down and just strokes the ball home. It was a lovely goal. And that was the first of these kind of complete domination. You know, it must have been in the 60% of possession, multiple shots. You know, we made it look really, really straightforward. I remember afterwards one of the Shrewsbury podcasts was saying we've probably seen the league champions there. And you know, that was a side saying that, what, 3-4 weeks into the season. You know, our play was being noticed because we were so dominant in some of those early away games.
Bit harsh on Plymouth though to not be talking about them. There we go. Got that one in there. We then hosted Barnsley the last game of August, Joe. Connor Chaplin scored a lovely free kick and Morsey scored a Matt Holland-esque goal from midfield. We ended up drawing that game 2-2, but it was another pretty good performance. And we were really enjoying that midfield partnership, weren't we, with Lee Evans and Sam Morsey. We were saying this is the best midfield partnership in the division. Really hope we can keep these two fit.
Yeah, Evans was just pinging the ball back from side to side and Morsey was just doing so much running, getting forward a lot, getting on the end of chances to score goals. I think that was his second of the season in, and he'd had a good chance in sort of every game up until that point. This game was obviously the frustration one where at 2-1, Marcus Harness scores a perfectly good goal. It gets unbelievably disallowed and then Callum Stiles manages to head the ball in from about 15 yards out from a corner. It loops in and a real, real unjust 2-2. And at this point, Barnsley hadn't really started the season that brightly and it looked frustrating. But as you got to the end of the season, it looked like it could have been a massive sort of swing, that extra 2 points we should have had of Barnsley there.
Hmm. And yeah, as you mentioned, Harness scoring what should have been a goal. I think people have forgotten how much of a crucial player he was for us at the start of the season.
I'm pretty sure, I can't remember whether it was a club award or another award, but he was the player of the month for August, scored a few goals. First month the club, scored some big goals as well in that time, the Burton one especially, but scored a few goals, player of the month, sort of a couple of assists, made a brilliant, brilliant start to the season there, which has sort of been forgotten about in sort of Nathan Broadhead's impact in the second half of the season.
Yeah, indeed. And one player that hadn't scored at this stage though, Seb, and it was beginning to become a little bit of a worry, wasn't it? It was Freddie Ladapo.
Yeah, it was becoming a bit of a thing, wasn't it? And he kind of has this relationship with the North Stand in the Northampton game, which followed Barnsley. It was a 6-0 win, and they're kind of cheering for him to try and get himself a goal. And he'd led the line very well. I remember being quite impressed, especially at Forest Green away. And I think he had a couple of early chances against MK, if I remember correctly, down the South Stand end. And yeah, he was leading the line fine. But as any new striker at a club, you want that goal to come, don't you? And it just wasn't falling for him. Harness was the one getting the headlines. Chaplin was kind of popping up with a couple here and there. And whilst he was doing very well up front, maybe I guess John Jules kind of comes in, starts one game in the number 9 role and scores a lovely goal. Maybe that was starting to weigh on his mind a little bit. And like I said, there's this little bit of a to and fro between the North Stand and him during this cup game where we're kind of all kind of begging for him to, you know, finally get off the mark.
And he does manage it, doesn't he? I wasn't really going to go into this game in any sort of detail, but we win 6-0. I think Ladapo misses a couple and then scores one.
Yeah.
So we're just talking about the league, though. Unbeaten in 6, Joe, sat second at the end of August. Not really many complaints at this stage, but we were all kind of in agreement that we probably do need to sign another striker.
Yes, yeah. It was, especially because Freddie hadn't scored at this point, it was a case that We need goals from that position as well as the good player holding up the ball, because I think, so you looked at the stats, he had the most shots per game in the team, the highest XG per 90 in the team. And it's like the chances are being created for the forward and he's just not taking them, and he was missing some good chances as well in that period. I think even in pre-season he had a couple of good opportunities against, I think, West Ham in the sort of big home pre-season friendly, sort of went through on goal and didn't score and missed another good chance. It's like, is he just going to be a good player, just not scoring as a striker? If you don't find your feet early on, it can sort of sum up your whole period at a club, can't it? And it was, I know it just felt, we need to get this striker in, and there was links. I think it was Willa Sula we were linked with, and then all of a sudden it was Gassana Hadmay signed.
And the rest, they say, is history or not. As we mentioned, Adapa had got off the mark in the Pizza Cup on that Tuesday in between the Barnsley game and Accrington away, but it was actually Caden Jackson who was picked to lead the line at Accrington on the Saturday, with John Jules playing off the left, and Connor Chaplin was left on the bench. That was a little bit of a surprise, wasn't it, Seb, to see Caden Jackson back, not only back, but back playing through the middle for us?
Yeah, definitely. I think we kind of saw towards... He kind of had that role, didn't he, towards the end of last season before he did his hamstring in. I think McKenna clearly trusted him and liked what he could bring from the kind of closing down and pressing from the front, given his superb pace. I kind of figured in the summer when, you know, John Jules comes in, Ladapo comes in, that we would see him as kind of a wide forward in the wide right or the wide left areas. So yeah, it was a bit of a surprise to see him come in and start that game. But I guess, you know, it's an example of McKenna's kind of horses for courses approach at the start of the season. We saw John Jules come in the number 9 slot against Shrewsbury. Jackson gets this one, and he did okay that day. I remember his pressing was pretty decent. He had a chance. He should have scored. He went through 1-on-1 at 0-0, and he should have taken his chance, but he hit the shot kind of straight at the keeper. And then this, like I said earlier, another box ticking. You know, we score two goals from Chaplin relatively late on, a place we traditionally struggle with. I hope I never have to go back to Accrington ever again. It's not been a happy place I've been to since we've been down in League One. It's a place we always tend to kind of get turned over. But yeah, one goal from a set piece again, one away at Accrington, and we kind of started to think, hang on a minute, this is feeling very, very different to the previous seasons at this level.
It did start to feel that way, and that win moved us back to the top of the table. And a more routine win followed on the Tuesday night against Bristol Rovers, with Chaplin again finding the net. So Chaplin starting to find some form in front of goal here. And I think Lee Evans scored that kind of weird goal from distance, isn't he? Didn't he? That sort of just bounced in low in front of the Swabby Robson stand. But next up, Joe, is what was the biggest game of the season so far at Hillsborough. Kieran McKenna again gave Caden Jackson the nod through the middle. This game, it was kind of uplifting, but also incredibly frustrating. And there was a lot of nonsense going on in the stands as well, wasn't there, Joe?
Yeah, well, we scored really, really early, didn't we? Caden Jackson in the first few minutes scored.
And nice then, finish.
Yeah, sort of ball, Edmondson drove forward and the ball broke to Jackson and he just lifted it, sort of put it away, really tidy finish. And then after that, I think we sort of were keeping them at arm's length, really, and they were getting, their crowd was getting so angry and over the top about every decision, even things where it's just like a free kick was given when it was obviously a free kick, and there was items raining down onto the pitch at the officials, and there was a few announcements over the tannoy, and it almost felt like the game was going to get cancelled. And then Dominic Iorfa puts into his own net and it's 2-0 with sort of 15 minutes left, and you think, well, this game's either going to get cancelled or there's going to be a riot or we're going to win. But then they managed to get one back. And then maybe because of the pressure that had been put on the officials, he misses a real blatant offside against Michael Smith, who's miles off when he scores the equaliser with 5 minutes left. But I don't know, that just seemed, the intimidation of the stadium sort of seemed to get to the officials as much as it got to the team. And I think probably by the end, we probably felt lucky to get out of there with a point after letting that one back in with 5 minutes left. But there's no way it should have got to that, really.
No, and if you thought that one was frustrating, 8 days later, we played Plymouth live on Sky. Jackson's playing at wing-back in this game.
Wes Burns is on international duty, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'd missed that one in my notes. And that does kind of make sense, doesn't it? Although it was pretty strange. Although I think Jackson did have quite a good game at wing-back. Ladapo finally gets off the mark. It's not quite the goal that goes in off the strikers behind, but it was a pretty scruffy goal, Seb. But we did what we always seem to do in previous seasons, so we can't tick this box off yet. We come out second best against a rival.
Yeah, still remnants maybe of the old Ipswich in there. We kind of, yeah, we go 1-0 up with the deflected
on Sky as well.
on Sky, yes, of course, on the Sunday. Was it Sunday kickoff, I think, wasn't it? Ladapo kind of goes through and has that deflected shot which just loops the one place Cooper can't get to it. And then I remember Harness missing a chance as well in the second half that went narrowly past the post, and that might well have killed the game because we were doing okay. And then Plymouth do what Plymouth do. You know, the equaliser was Ballymumba, wasn't it? There was some criticism for Connor Chaplin, who kind of goes down looking to win a free kick in the box, but maybe he should be stronger there, and Mumba gets the equaliser. And then Edmondson kind of with a weak pass out from the back, Morgan Whittaker kind of gets onto it and has that goal again from outside the box, put them 2-1 up. And then in the last minute, obviously, Walton goes up for the corner. And it's a fantastic save by Cooper, isn't it, to keep the scores led, to keep them ahead at 2-1. And yeah, on the balance of play, I thought we played really well that day. I thought we probably deserved a point. I don't think we deserved to win the game, but we certainly didn't deserve to lose it, I don't think. And yeah, frustration following that Sheffield Wednesday game as well, because the table was kind of starting to take shape a little bit, wasn't it? We were still second at that point, and we could kind of see how things were going to go. And to go away from home at both those and only walk away from it with 1 point, given how well we played both at Hillsborough and at Home Park, was kind of a bit of a kick in the teeth, wasn't it? Because we played well on both occasions.
Joe, did you start to worry at this stage that it was just going to be same old Ipswich this season?
Not really, because that was our first defeat, wasn't it?
I felt
pretty confident the whole way through the season that we were going to get promoted. The only time when it stopped, obviously, going into is when we drew 0-0 at Bristol Rovers. I thought, okay, well, that is the top two done. But it's now a case of getting us set for the players. But I was confident we'd be top two the whole way through the first half of the season, including after this Plymouth game. So I thought we went there and I thought we probably just about edged the game. And it was a case of Plymouth can't keep getting away with it. But obviously, 101 points later, they did. But no, I was still confident.
And I'm sure you would have been after a pretty cathartic victory the following weekend against Portsmouth, where I think we're fourth. We dropped to second. I think Portsmouth were just behind us. They were hot on our heels. They'd had a good start to the season. They came to Portland Road that following Saturday. John Jules played up front on his own. A really good performance. We scored a late winner. We overcame a team that was right up there with us, Joe. This felt like a really big moment in the season, didn't it?
Yeah, and another goal for Freddie as well. A really good goal coming off the bench this time. So it was then a couple of goals and a couple of big games. And this one felt a big game because at the time, Portsmouth were right up there with us. I know they subsequently fell away, but they were sort of top of the league a couple of games before this. And we were just miles better than them on the day, weren't we? We dominated, but they had two penalties and obviously scored them both. And it just felt like, come on, we've got to win this one. Otherwise, we're looking at, all of a sudden, we've come up against good teams. Sheffield Wednesday played well, drawn. Plymouth played well, lost. Now Portsmouth at home played well, and we looked like we were drawing or not going to win that game. So that was a great relief when Wes Burns sort of nodded in Edwards' cross, sort of from in the goal almost, wasn't it? It was already there. And big attendance at Portman Road, a big crowd, big noisy crowd there as well. And it was a sort of a sign of things to come for the second half of the season, really, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And was that Burns' first goal of the season as well? I seem to remember...
He scored against MK in the home game.
Shot across the goalie, wasn't it?
But he hadn't quite lived up to last season at this stage. I mean, how could he, really?
Yeah, there was a few... there's a lot of comments about Burns through the first half of the season, wasn't there? Especially in the time after he was left out of the Wales squad. But the only thing I would say for him is that he was still working hard, but he was popping up with big goals in big games, wasn't he? All the big games he seemed to score goals, especially at Portman Road.
Yeah, and that's exactly where we were 3 days later. This was the Kyle Edwards show against Cambridge. Kind of forgot about this game where we scored three late goals, didn't we? Or three pretty late goals to back up that win against Pompey. And then we went on and won away at Morecambe. These 3 game weeks are huge in League One, and that was another 9 point week, Seb. Things really looking up. Morecambe wasn't easy either, though, was it?
Yeah, no, it was second time we'd done it, wasn't it, in the season. So the Cambridge game, we had to be patient at home. And obviously, John Jules gets the breakthrough and a couple of late stunners from Edwards, one with the kind of cross from the byline that goes in, and then that one towards the end where he kind of runs onto it. And then Morecambe away wasn't great. I remember going to it, and it was probably our worst performance of the, maybe up there with Burton. The first half, certainly, we were pretty poor. We couldn't really kind of get going. I think Edwards maybe got a start in that game, and Jackson were the two wide players, and it wasn't really working. And McKenna kind of tries to change them over, and when Chaplin misses a penalty. We go 1-0 down, but then we kind of start to get ourselves back in the game in the second half. And Edmondson scores from another set piece. I can't remember if it was a corner or a free kick, but it's another set piece goal. And then we get a second penalty, and obviously Evans takes that one and slams it home. And yeah, I guess I think at the time I remember saying that this, you know, that, like it's been said in football for so many years, a sign of a good side is when they don't play amazingly and they get the points. That's what we were doing. That was a big week again to get those three games on the bounce, 9 points in the bag to really kind of cement our position at the top of the league.
Yeah, it was great. 1-10 at that stage. We'd started really strong. We were really confident. Had no idea what was ahead, though. We produced one of the worst performances of the season the following Saturday. When Lincoln came to town, Joe.
It was a frustrating game, this one, wasn't it? Because we had a lot of chances, and it was one of those ones where you end up with 30 shots against 3, but I don't think we really... It's hard to say we didn't do enough, because we obviously did do enough, but it wasn't a game I walked out thinking, like, I can't believe we haven't won that. It felt like, actually, we haven't done the right things here. They've just got bodies back in the box. We've kept trying to do the same things, and that they weren't working, and we just carried on doing things that weren't working, and sort of that was the game. You sort of walked out really disappointed.
Seb, you've started to get a little bit worried about that, like, because we'd seen us struggle a little bit and then come out on top against the likes of Burton and Morecambe and Accrington to some degree. But then,
teams started to come to Portman Road with quite clear game plans, didn't they? Cambridge kind of executed it pretty well for the first 70 minutes of the game or so. It was quite obvious that we were going to be looking at, on paper, maybe a back three, but in reality, a back five from oppositions with stay-at-home fullbacks that we'd kind of struggled to find space in behind. And it clearly became quite obvious quite quickly that a lot of teams were going to come to Portman Road and do that. I wasn't worried at this stage. The Lincoln game was frustrating, but given how dominant we've been in some of the previous performances, I kind of remember just writing off as one of those days. We'll discuss Cheltenham in a minute. That was kind of a similar one. I remember thinking that, you know, sometimes you can play all day and you're simply not going to score. And I wasn't overly concerned, because I guess under previous regimes and managers, I'd kind of be more worried about, are they going to be able to find a way around this? I remember a similar way on with Burley going back, you know, 20, 25 years. Tranmere and the like would come to Portman Road and just look to completely stifle the play. But again, like I had with Burley, with McKenna, there's this full faith that he will learn from the experience and then go out there and, you know, if it happens again, he'll learn how to kind of break the lines and play through those low blocks. And with him in the dugout, I didn't really have any concerns this would be a major thing for the rest of the season because of how professional and how, you know, how many coaches and analysts we have at any one time.
Yeah, we were probably quite pleased that the next visitors to Portman Road were Derby, a team that were up there challenging for promotion. They were always going to come and try and give us a game.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kieran McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
That was a weird one, wasn't it? Live on Sky, we're wearing a black kit. But some people call this one a real seminal moment, Seb, because we came out on top against another rival, also on Sky.
Yeah, I think it was. It was a big game, wasn't it? You know, they'd built it up. It was on Sky. We had the pyrotechnics before the kickoff, and we're in the black kit as a bit of a marketing gimmick. But we played well that night. You know, Derby at that point had started to get their groove going. I think Warren had only been in the job a couple of weeks, maybe. He hadn't been there for that long, but you don't really want to be playing a Paul Warren side after he's had a decent, you know, transfer window and a decent amount of time with the with the players on the training pitch. But yeah, we played well that night. And again, big game Burns kind of steps up when he needs to and gets the goal. It was you know, a really good performance under the lights, and similar to those Pompey, that Portsmouth game, it was kind of another box ticked against another so-called big boy. I don't know where they were in the league at that point, but we kind of figured they'd be finishing in or around the top six, and it was another decent solid 3 points against a potential rival, which we traditionally we don't do as Ipswich Town, do we? How many times in the past under Lambert were we saying that we just got this awful record against the top six? We were starting now to tick those wins off against the rivals around us in the league.
And it was the big crowd. We always seem to not turn up when the big crowds had turned up in previous seasons. Ticket promotions, big crowds, yeah. Big derbies. Wouldn't turn up. But this was close to a sellout, I think, wasn't it? Or an official sellout or unofficial sellout at the time. And it was just felt a big game. Good atmosphere. Friday night, I think everyone had a couple of beers, ready to get themselves fired up for the game, including not the players.
Yeah, it was a big night, that one. I remember Tommy Miller was there that night. I bought him a beer in RK Street Tavern after the game. That's how high on life I was at that after that one. Caden Jackson missed a penalty, though. We're really rotating that front line at this stage, Seb. Is this a case of us just not having that hot hand?
I think so, yeah.
Or is it just, you mentioned it earlier, the horses for courses thing, and that maybe felt like that was going to be the plan going forward?
Maybe. I mean, I think we were just struggling to find that consistent goal scorer at the top of the pitch. You know, Harness had chipped in with a few. Chaplin was starting to get in his groove and contribute. But the number nine role was, you know, Freddie was finding himself on the bench a little bit. Spoiler alert, in the game we're about to discuss, he kind of gets a couple of goals and that really kind of sets him off on a decent run. But yeah, I think we were just still trying to find that formula in the final third of the pitch. You know, the two tens and the two wide players were doing their part, but we were struggling for a really consistent number nine delivering the goals at that point still, which is an indictment of the summer recruitment. We know we were after George Hurst. We know we needed George Hurst. He was clearly identified as being the one to fit that model as McKenna wanted to play. And kind of until we got him, we were kind of scrabbling around a little bit, trying to find players that could, you know, do the job. I think was it Hadmay injured at this point? So, there was no real...
He did at Plymouth, didn't he, I think?
Yeah, there was no real option other than, you know, Freddie was kind of the out-and-out striker and John Jules and Jackson would come in here and there, and there was no like-for-like physical unit in a Hadmay off the bench to try and change the games in the final few minutes of matches.
And you kind of teased this game away at Port Vale. We were without Lee Evans and Sam Morsey for this one, Joe. This was the night that Cameron Humphreys really announced himself, wasn't it? He scored a fantastic goal, really mature performance, and Ladapo scored a couple as well.
Yeah, there was the, obviously with both of those players being out, Don Ball, I think it was almost Don Ball's first start in the league as well. And Cam Humphreys, it was his full league debut. I think he'd made a couple of appearances against Charlton the previous season, but this was the first time he had any league action this year, and big performance from him. Scores the first goal, or the second goal it was, wasn't it? Scores the second goal after a brilliantly worked first goal. And for the third goal, it's him making that lung-busting run all the way to the byline, right, sort of as the game gets towards the end and pulls the ball across, and it ends up at Ladapo with an open goal to score. But this was a really tough game. I thought Port Vale were a good side that night, and
yeah, they were.
I thought on that big pitch at Vale Park, it was a real effort, and this was some of those away games, you're not always playing the best teams in the league, but sometimes you go to these away games and you get yourself over the line and they feel a massive win. I think that without Sam Morsey, without Lee Evans in there, two players making their debuts who never played with each other, and you come away with a big win, that felt like a big moment in the season, that one.
It did, yeah. And do you think it's maybe forgotten a little bit, Joe, just how much of an impact Cameron Humphreys made, because he ended up probably in the side a lot more than what would have been planned for him, but he made some really key contributions, didn't he?
Yeah, I think 100% that's the case, because as he ended up having to play too many games, and I think maybe McKenna didn't do him any favours a couple of times when he's playing him in cup games as well, in between the league games, and I think he was a little bit overplayed in that sort of January period. And yeah, some teams, in some of those games, when you go away to Wickham, you've got a ref who maybe isn't going to give you much protection. He struggled in those games. And there were games when they got three around our two in the middle, and he did struggle. But generally, it was a performance. It was a season of much more positives than negatives there. Big goals, big moments, big performances when needed, and just fitted right in when he needed to. And well, he's got a very big future at this football club, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. He's one that we're really excited about.
And also just carry on with Humphreys again, a player who still will be under 21 for next season. So we know McKenna likes to have a bigger squad, and that's almost a free player that he can have in there when we don't have that luxury with Harry Clark being older, Tyrese Jones-Jules being older, Premier League loanees that come in under 21 count as a squad player next season where they don't in League One. So I don't know, there's all talk of him going out on loan, but I think he's going to be one that they want to keep around to give us that extra body, which McKenna will like.
Excellent stuff. Already getting excited about next season. I remember going into the away game at Charlton, a lot of the talk after that game, Seb, we'll talk about before the game first, was if Humphreys was going to keep his place as Morsley comes back in. That was always going to happen, but Evans didn't. Was it going to be Don Ball or Cameron Humphreys? And I think maybe the pragmatic choice was to go with Don Ball. So then we go to Charlton and we fully expect to just pick up a nice 2-0 win on the road.
or a 4-2 win at 93 minutes, whatever it was. Yeah, I mean, we've discussed this game to absolute death, haven't we? You will never see a game like this for 10, 15 years or so. It was absolutely crazy, wasn't it? I think, was this Ball's last appearance? I think, was it confirmed after this that he had the injury? I think he went off, didn't he? I think, if I'm rightly, he goes off and, yeah, he's got a knock. And, yeah, that game was crazy. We actually threw away the 2-goal lead at Port Vale, didn't we, in the week? We were 2-0 up. And they pulled it back to 2-2 before Ladapo gets the winner. And again, we all know what happens. 2-0 up away to Charlton. Edmondson and John Jules with the goals. Pull it back to 2-2. Ladapo has his Noel Hunt moment in front of you guys. Morsy puts the icing on the cake. You left the ground, didn't you? Happy, thinking, boom, 4-2, great. And then we all know what went wrong. And I guess the major fallout from that, I think at the time on the flagship, we were all saying it's just a freak. It's a freak game. I was at the Derby 4-4 game under Mick in 2013, whenever it was. It's the kind of thing that comes round once every 10 years or so. But I don't think we kind of acknowledged what a kind of effect it would have on the upcoming games of the season.
And yeah, I think there's two issues that were, well, three issues causing it at the time. One was Christian Walton that was in a run of pretty poor form at this stage, just not keeping shots out of his goal. He was playing awfully. He just wasn't really saving any shots, was he? There weren't any. It's not like they were all easy shots that he was just letting in. Maybe the one at Cheltenham that followed this was, but he just wasn't keeping the ball out of the goal. And we talked about how Connor Chaplin had 7 goals in the first half of the season and 19 in the second. I think if you look at Christian Walton's clean sheet numbers, and he ended up with winning the Golden Gloves, 23 clean sheets, but I think something like 15 of those were in the second half of the season and 8 were in the first half, maybe even more in the second half of the season. It was we were just conceding too many individual goals there. And again, the other thing that came from this game, as Seb mentioned, Dominic Ball picked up the injury, as did Tyrese Jones-Jules. Neither of them played a league game for us up until the running for Dominic Ball and those two. And this was really when it felt that the squad, which looked okay at the start of the season, we then signed Panucci Kamara and Gassana Hadmi on transfer deadline day to give us that little boost to get it there. Well, neither of those two were fit. The central midfielder that Kamara was backing up, Dominic Ball, was not fit. Lee Evans was not fit. And Gassana Hadmi was the second striker behind Freddy Ladapo and Tyrese Jones-Jules. Well, Jones-Jules now wasn't fit. Hadmi still wasn't fit. So we ended up really short in those two positions the two positions that we needed to strengthen on deadline day, which we did, didn't strengthen us. And then those two positions were weakened after this game. And I think it wasn't just the drop in the points in the ridiculous circumstances here. I think it was losing those two players from our rotation that really hurt us as well from there.
Yeah, and the confidence, as Seb mentioned. We were interestingly back on telly in midweek on ITV4 as we beat Bracknell away in the cup. I think Kamara scored in that game, didn't he? But it's all about the Blue Monday live show the following Saturday, Seb, because it was another frustrating draw at home to Cheltenham, as we'd kind of alluded to. But I remember this first half, we must have had about 30 corners. I think we scored from one of them. But it turned into a really frustrating afternoon.
That's the word, isn't it? Frustration. You know, we all kind of thought we'd have the Blue Monday live event afterwards in the Sir Bobby Robson suite after a home, pretty straightforward victory. I think, did Ben pre-record a message for the guys in the live show saying, I'm sure we'd just come off the back of a strong win against Cheltenham. And yeah, it was just really annoying, wasn't it? It was one of those games where, what's the cliche, you'd still be playing now and you wouldn't have scored. I mean, you know, Kamara hits the inside of the post in the 90-something minute, and the ball kind of comes back out to play. You know, it's not going to be your day. We scored early, didn't we? Wolfenden, I think, scores pretty early in that one. And you kind of think, here we go. It's another routine run-of-the-mill game. Walton, I remember getting beaten at his near post to kind of continue that dodgy run of form. It's a shot I thought he should have done a little bit better with. And then, yeah, after that, it's just backs to the walls from Cheltenham. We throw everything at them, but we haven't got the quality off the bench that we had later on in the season, or maybe some of the confidence going forward to really get the breakthrough. And yeah, just incredibly, incredibly frustrating day that, you know, we all kind of felt really annoyed at. And when that Kamara shot hit the post, the inside of the post for me, I just knew it wasn't going to happen, was it?
No, but your tracksuit that night, Joe, did put a few smiles back on Blue Monday faces, didn't it? And that was a really proud moment for us, wasn't it? Getting to do a live show at Portman Road, like real pinch me moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was a great show, sort of great guest we had there with
Russell Osman
and Blue Wilson from the ladies team. And no, it was a incredible night. Just a shame that we weren't going into the back of it's off 3 points. But it was one, to me, whilst the performance was frustrating, it was one where we played really well. We just couldn't score the goal.
Yeah, we were. Where did we go after this one? I think
it was Exeter, wasn't it?
Exeter away, yeah. And Cam Humphreys comes back into the team. Cam Humphreys had come back into the team for that Cheltenham game because, as you mentioned, well, Lee Evans is out, Don Ball is out. So Humphreys is back in, and this is quite an extended run in the team for him here. But we brush aside Exeter away live on Sky. And that was a good one. That was what we needed to do. Again, we can tick the box of bouncing back from a bad defeat. And that's something that Plymouth did all season long. But then there was another setback only a few days later at home to Fleetwood, Seb. I think we might have done a live show after that one.
Yeah, I think we did a post-match reaction, didn't we? Yeah, the Exeter game was really, really good, I thought. Really good away performance. At that point, they were still sort of 9th, 10th in the league, touching in distance of the playoffs. We played well. Goals from Harness and Ladapo. It's crazy. I think that was Harness's last goal before Fleetwood, wasn't it? All his goals kind of came in that first half of the season. And then Fleetwood was, you know, incredibly frustrating. I think Wolfenden scored again pretty early on. And I think we held the lead for something crazy like 94 minutes until they kind of throw Joe Garner on. He has an effort from a corner, which is a decent save from somebody clears it off the line. I think it was Davis gets it off the line. And you think, right, well, we've ridden that one out now. It's a 1-0 home win. Let's close it off. And then there's that freak goal, isn't there, from Kieran Hayes on the touchline. Gets the shot off, takes a deflection off Burgess and goes into the one place where Walton can't get near it. And then even after that, Jackson goes straight down the other end, doesn't he? And it's a really blatant penalty, I thought. But for whatever reason, the ref doesn't give it. And yeah, that was just incredibly frustrating. And off the back of, you know, the frustrations of the Cheltenham draw, the frustrations of the Charlton throwing the lead away, it just kind of added a little bit more kind of fuel to that fire that we weren't necessarily getting the luck of the draw at that point, because I think Plymouth at that point were winning with deflected goals all the time. And we started having the conversations around XG saying, well, it's not sustainable. They will start to drop off. And we were having these kind of moments just go against us. And it really felt like the odds were not on our side at that stage.
Yeah. And we were really struggling against the low block in the early part of the winter, weren't we, Joe? We started to look a little bit low on a plan B at times.
Well, it felt like Lincoln had come and done a job on us, and then everyone had learned from that, and then it took a few games for us to learn, to go against what everyone had learned against us almost there. Apart from that Fleetwood game, where I thought they were, in the second half, they dominated the ball and were just the better side in that second half. But it did feel like, okay, this has become quite a poor run now, wasn't it, when you look at sort of Lincoln, Charlton, Cheltenham, Fleetwood, 4 out of 5 or 6 games where we've dropped points in them all, and we've dropped points in all of them from good positions, really. And it was becoming a bit, oh God, like, is this happening again? We're the better team every week here, nearly, and we're just not getting the rewards for it. Is it something we're doing wrong? Is it something that we need to change? Or is it just the lack of bodies, the lack of the subs that were making the difference in the early games in the season, the Edwards, the John Jules, the Ladapos, who were coming off the bench and scoring goals for us in important goals for us at the start of the season, that had sort of stopped happening and we were finishing games weaker rather than stronger.
Yeah, it was a frustrating part of the season, that was. But we then played Peterborough at home. I think this was an early kickoff, wasn't it? Because England were playing
France that night.
Yeah. France in the quarterfinals.
Okay. God, that godforsaken day. I was in sunnier climes, although actually the weather was miserable in Qatar that day. It was like the only day that it was bad, but a really enjoyable game, that one. I think Aluko played, it was Chaplin Aluko behind Caden Jackson, and Chaplin scored an excellent double. It's the famous now famous Glenn Wheeler commentary line of "It's Connor Chaplin, baby," where he absolutely lashes it in from a set piece. We're back on top at this stage, Seb. We've managed, despite this little blip, we've managed to get back on top. You're probably thinking, "Oh, we've had our dodgy spell now. We're going to be fine now."
Yeah, it was a really good performance again, wasn't it? You know, they'd been on Peterborough at that stage were on a real bad run of form, and I think there were lots of chances of you getting sacked in the morning towards McCann, because no matter what he did, they were okay at London Road, but away from home, they were really, really poor. So big result for us. Chaplin, you know, lovely little header for the first one. That second one where he actually smashes it home after, I think we had about three penalty kind of cries in one phase from a corner. Really cold day, -5, I think it was that day. It was that big cold snap. So I'm sure you had, it might have been a bad weather day in Qatar, but I'm sure you were warmer than we were. But it was an excellent performance. Gets us back top of the league, beating a so-called bigger boy, albeit not in a decent run of form. And I kind of thought at the time, okay, well, we've had this blip with Fleetwood, Cheltenham, Charlton, that kind of stuff. You know, this is a big win against a rival. And now we're really going to look to push on and finish the calendar year strongly.
But it wasn't to be. We're not top of the table for very long, as we're frustrated and beaten by Gareth Ainsworth Wickham the following week, Joe. Richard Keogh started that game, and it was a pretty miserable game all round, wasn't it?
Yeah, they scored it was probably a good goal on their behalf, a bad one on ours, where Humphreys was sort of muscled off the ball in the midfield, and he just ran at sort of Burgess and just left him flat-footed and scored, and we didn't. We sort of had chance after that, but not a huge amount. And they just slowed the game down to an absolute standstill, didn't they, for the second half. It was just one of those ones where certain teams, when they're ahead in games, it's not fun to watch, is it, when you're watching Wickham, just Accrington, teams like that, just trying to totally stop the flow of the game. And they did it. They won. Ainsworth came out with the comments about how we brought more staff than they sort of have in their whole club to the game, and that they were pleased to beat it. But then you sort of look, that was our first away defeat of the season, wasn't it? Second away defeat of the season at that point. And it just felt like the squad, we needed to get to January to reinforce the squad at this point. We felt short. Lee Evans came back on for Cameron Humphreys in the second half. He sort of felt fairly rushed back from injury to get back on there. And we hope that strengthens, but he never quite looked the same after his first major injury. He didn't sort of get back to the standards he set himself at the start of the season. And the same with Marcus Harness, who'd picked up a bad injury in a sort of Papa John's game, and it looked like he was going to be out for a long time. He came back quite quickly, but again, whilst he got back quickly, he never looked like the player he was at the start of the season.
Then teams, as you'd mentioned, were a little bit sharper against us. They knew what to expect from us, which would have made it harder for Evans and Harness to make the same impact, right?
Yeah. But yep, quite true. And it was probably just that they'd sort of came into the team, they'd lost their sort of slickness with the sort of the rest of the squad, and that midfield balance had just totally changed, really, hadn't it, between sort of Morsy and Humphreys compared to with Evans there.
So did this mean it was a miserable Christmas for you, Seb, or were you still pretty?
No, given where we finished the year, I mean, we're kind of second going into the Boxing Day games. I don't think any of us could have complained with that. To go from 11th last year, you know, the previous 3 years, we haven't even bothered the playoffs, let alone the top two. So we were still in a decent position going into it. The Wickham game was just one of those annoying games where, you know, against an Ainsworth side, you kind of know what to expect, and they just kind of did a number on us and shut the game out and made it a bit of a horrible spectacle to watch. But overall, going into Boxing Day, second in the league, I was still pretty confident that the second half of the season would go as we all wanted it to.
And we were still tracking at sort of 2 points per game at this point, weren't we? And as you know, 2 points per game is guaranteed promotion. You get yourself 92 points in League One, you're gonna go up. But that's what we felt at the time, didn't we? We sort of, well, we're over 2 points a game. If we carry on like this, Plymouth will fall back. Maybe Sheffield Wednesday will keep it up, but you're not going to need to get much more than what we're getting here if we carry on like this. And obviously, it didn't turn out that way. But had you not been at 2 points per game at the midway break, you'd have just never, ever in a million years been able to get enough points in that second half of the season. And we knew we were in contention for automatics, and the playoffs were, whilst not a given, it would have taken a hell of a bad run to miss out on the playoffs totally.
Yeah. And as you kind of alluded to there, we did reach the halfway point on Boxing Day, where we comfortably swept aside Oxford. Ladapo, Burns and Chaplin all scored. We're back. We're in second. I think we'd lost three games at this stage. So we weren't to lose too many more. But pretty pleasing stuff overall. What were your main concerns, though, Seb, at this stage of the season? Or weren't there any?
The only real concern I had was that we needed to bring bodies in January, didn't we? We couldn't go through the second half of the season with the kind of lack of options in the striking position. I think that was fairly apparent from kind of November onwards that there was no plan B in terms of personnel off the bench if Ladapo wasn't on it in a game. You know, he was having to play every game and run himself into the ground because there was no viable options behind him. But, you know, I think Ashton did an interview in November time and said, well, we will be relentless in our pursuit of promotion with regards to the January window. So we knew the reinforcements
weren't lying,
coming.
Was he?
No, not at all. Yeah, absolutely. We knew the reinforcements were on their way. We just had to get to the point where the January window opens and we're in a position of strength, which is what we didn't do, obviously, under Mick in 2014-15. And that's what we did. You know, we see the year out, finishing kind of second in the calendar year, finishing second in the league. And then we go into January and we get our business done early. And my only concern was, you know, if we can get those people in quickly and they can hit the ground running, then we'll be good to go for the second half of the season.
Yeah, I think there was the problem that we play quite a complicated system, so you need to get the players in and give them a sort of a few weeks to get going effectively, and you could see the season was becoming a little bit disjointed with all the cup games we had throughout this month and that we knew were coming up into the January as well, that it meant that whilst the team was staying relatively consistent in the league, it was being chopped and changed through the cup competitions, and it was becoming, I don't know, we weren't quite making the, we felt like we stopped going forwards. It felt like we'd sort of hit a bit of a wall here, and we were just desperately waiting for January to come around so that we could regroup and go again. And it was just that case of how early can we get the business done? And when you looked at the areas we had, we needed the central midfielder desperately because we only really had Sam Moores in, Cameron Humphreys. We didn't solve the striker problem in August, so we needed the striker. And then it was Sonny Aluko sort of had fallen really out of contention in the league, really, hadn't he? So it was a case of needing someone there. Marcus Harness has obviously had the bad injury. Kyle Edwards was doing okay, but isn't sort of someone who... He was more of a wide player than one of the 10s that we'd played. So you could see a gap there, and it was just a case of, are we going to be able to go out and get the right players, and are we going to be able to get them in early enough so that they're going to be able to make a difference this season? Because come the end of January, we were in a pretty... Not in a dire position, but we were in a position where it looked like we had a hell of a lot of work to do to go for that top two from there, didn't it?
It did. And Seb, could you remember anyone saying that we might need to sign a new right back? Because I don't.
No, Donasian, I think, was ever present. I think he might have missed one game.
He was probably one of the players of the season by this stage, wasn't he?
And he had been under McKenna previously in the previous 6 months last year, hadn't he? You know, we all know what you get from Donasian. He had that great relationship with Burns kind of built up and their understanding together. And okay, he's not the best going forward, but he brings the best out of Wes Burns. He's very solidly defensively. I think McKenna and Paul Cook described him as the best one-on-one defender in the club. So you know what you get from him, but it's an example, isn't it, of our ownership now and our kind of progressive stance as a football club, that if we see an upgrade available, we will go and do it. And I think we might see similar this summer in certain positions. Obviously, we'll discuss our transfer dealings later on in the summer, but I think if the right player is available at the right price and they will add quality and add value and improve on our squad, we will go and do it, because that's the kind of club we are now.
We are, and it's long may it continue. Hey, so that was part one. I believe Ben will be here hosting part two. That should be available early next week. So that's, what is that, the week beginning 22nd of May or something like that. Doesn't really matter when you listen to this one, does it, Joe? This is a timeless classic.
Yes, can be listened to maybe when you're looking at the journey, when we're in the Champions League in sort of 3 years' time, you look back to where the journey began, and this will be the first port of call.
Or indeed, if you want to sort of remind yourself of what it's normally like to be an Ipswich fan, you could listen to some of our previous season reviews. I'm not even sure we've bothered the last couple of years, but I seem to remember doing them at the end of the Mick era, and we were talking about how much of a difference Emi Hughes made when he was in the team. So that really puts a date stamp on that one. Seb, we are, as always, doing a giveaway on Twitter. Can you talk us through that one, please?
We are, yeah. We've teamed up with the guys at Mazzella Designs. They've done one of the graphic prints of the opening goal by Chaplin against Exeter in the 6-0 in the game that secured the promotion. It's kind of got a bit of commentary underneath, and it's got the old school Football Manager 2D kind of icons showing the player positions and stuff. So we've got a giveaway going out on the socials. It's an A3 print, I think it is. So if you go to @BlueMondayITFC, you will see the tweet that we've put out. You need to follow us. You need to follow Mazzella Designs, which is just @MazzellaDesigns, and retweet the tweet from our socials, and the guys will announce the winner on Sunday, I believe.
Excellent stuff. Joe, you look like you've got space for that in the background somewhere.
Well, so this, the problem is this has become my wife's office now because she works from home and I don't. And so she has to have the awkward conversation as to why she has random football shirts hanging up. So I like to change it for every pod that I'm on. So she has to deal with why it's currently Luongo and Morsi hanging up. Somebody thought it was an AC Milan shirt in her meeting last week, though. So there is that.
Blimey. AC Milan, one of the worst Champions League semi-finalists of all time, surely this year. But we'll move on from that. Joe, there was some quite interesting news from the local press this week. Andy Warren, good friend of the show, is moving on from his post as a reporter at the East Anglian Daily Times. But he's staying, thankfully, he's staying with Ipswich Town, isn't he? He's moving to work for the club.
Yeah, and he's gone into the media team, Ipswich Town. So it's not just off on the pitch where we're investing. It's good to see somebody a sort of Andy's quality, like we've all, I'm sure, listened to the Kings of Anglia podcast, read his work across the East Anglian and the Ipswich Star over the years, and it's always good stuff. He's a good guy, good journalist, and it'll be good to see him now still continuing to play a part in the club and there. And it's good to see that the investment doesn't stop sort of throughout the club, because this is one of the big changes in the game changer era, the Mark Ashton era, is that just the size of the backroom staff and the club staff, because it was really stripped down to the absolute bone under Marcus Evans, and the media team would be one person and sort of having to do everything. Now it's sort of up to three or four, and you've got that, you've got all the works going on around the ground, you've got, I know you go on the website and look at the club vacancies, there's always jobs on there, and it's just what we need, what the club needed, what the town needed, because there's always been good people working for the club, but they've been working with sort of two hands tied behind their backs with the resources that they've had to work with. And now sort of the foundation is flourishing, the community trust is growing again. And these are just the positive moves that will ensure that when the club gets to the Premier League, because we will get there, that it will be a Premier League club when it gets there, not a League One or a Championship club just punching above its weight.
Excellent. Lovely stuff, Joe. And Seb, before we go, why should our listeners tune in to part two? What's going to happen?
Well, those guys have got the lovely bit. They've got a bit of a hard slog at the start with kind of January, February time. And then it goes into the crazy run, and you can relive all those amazing, incredible away days towards the end of the season. Yeah, Ben's hosting. I think Rich, Craig and Dave will all be on there, and they can relive the home run that started after that Bristol Rovers game that kind of saw us to promotion, and yeah, relive those magical moments like Hurst's goal away at Barnsley.
Excellent. Thanks, Seb. Thanks, Joe. That was part one. Make sure you go and check out part two when it's available. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. Have a good one.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.